Money starts right now with breaking news. Stocks getting shattered today. The Dow having its worst day since February, tanking more than 800 points. The selling accelerating into the close. And we close at the dead lows of the day. S&P 500 now having its worst losing streak in 2 years. And take a look at the sea of red on Wall Street. The market took no prisoners. Tech getting hit the hardest, down nearly 5%. The NASDAQ falling a whopping 4%, having its worst day since Brexit. Everything from transports to small caps taking on the chin. 66% of the S&P 500 close in correction territory or worse. It was a wild day out there, as it looks like we are finally seeing some panic set into the market. So are things going to get worse before they get better? Is this a dip you buy? What do you do, guys?
Well, I think the good news is we're right on the cusp of earnings season. We sort of talked about that last night. I'm not going to suggest that I knew the Dow was going to be down 800 points today, but we have mentioned the warning signs have been there. The market just hasn't cared until today. What are those warning signs? Well, technology absolutely has been rolling over. Quite frankly, it started with Facebook a couple months ago when it went down 23% in 7 minutes. We talked about how an individual stock can do that. Who's to say the broader market can't do that? The small cap index has been going lower. Transports have been starting to roll over. I'm of the belief that this whole thing with China is not going to get settled anytime soon. I think that's been a problem. Mr. Mnuchin today said, China, don't continue to devalue currency. I think that was a factor. Finally, though, the market seemed to care. That's the bad news. The good news, as I said, we're on the cusp of an earnings season that I think will be strong. My concern will be, what will guidance be in the wake of a lot of these pre-announcements we've seen over the last couple
weeks? And maybe you get buybacks back. That was the reason earnings were coming up. You had a blackout.
A buyback blackout.
You had a blackout. So maybe you get them to help the heavy lifting. But I think today was technicals. It wasn't fundamentals. If you look back in January, February, similar, but we ran up a lot more prior to January. So I think all things being equal, we're right around support levels in the market, the 200-day.
Earnings season. I mean, Guy had mentioned the PPG,
right.
Procter & Gamble.
That's the problem we have, right? So if we hadn't had those earnings warnings and Flower Corp after the close today, earnings warnings there. So if we didn't have those, then you might look at this and say, okay, maybe this is an opportunity to buy the dip for the longer run. I'm not clear on that now. I do think in the very short term, you see a day like this, Dow's down 800 points. This is not the day to panic. This is the day to start looking at, hey, wait a second, as a trader, maybe I want to pick this up. So what I'm looking for, and maybe it happens tomorrow, you wake up, Dow is down 200-300 points of futures in the morning, and then you get that reversal. That to me would be very positive, and I would be buying that.
I agree completely. I think we're a little bit further down now. Clearly, markets overseas are going to open down. Europe's going to do poorly tomorrow. And we'll probably open down, too. I'm sort of intrigued by this. I always say that when things start to trade down in integers at a time, something else is going on, and that's appealing to me. I mean, you know, today I got trampled by that thundering herd of integers going down. But I don't think that things have changed that much fundamentally in terms of how the U.S. economy is doing. And I think we're going to see good earnings. I hear Guy's point, and it's a good one, about it's not just the earnings, it's about the guidance. But now the bar is lower for earnings, right? It's
right.
Significantly lower in many cases for earnings.
But doesn't that mean, remember we talked about in January, February, we heard about risk parity accounts that no one understands, the CTAs that no one understands, gamma that no one understands. It felt like that integers was part of that. So I don't think it's something that's tangible, which makes it more viable to me.
So
it runs its course.
Okay.
You deleverage, you de-risk.
So
once you get to a certain level, it becomes a screaming buyback, and then it evens out a little bit.
And the 43% spike in vol that we saw today, I mean, if you were to believe that there are risk parity accounts at work, et cetera, and all that's going on, then that was one of your catalysts.
Right. And so all those things are reason why you want to start looking to buy this market potentially rather than panicking here and trying to buy puts with vol spiking like that. This is, to Grasso's point, kind of a technical, mechanical part of the market. That doesn't mean we can't go lower. Doesn't mean that the economy might be slowing or not. But the very short term, there's going to be a tradable opportunity here.
Here is my question. I'm sure the home gamer is thinking the same question because we have very astute viewers out there. You're thinking, what does this market sell-off tell us? Are there questions about the U.S. economy, to Karen's point? I mean, when you take a look under the hood of the markets, right, we lost FANG, back in June? The average small-cap stock was down 6% or more than that in the month of October, down 20% from their 52-week highs. We have all sorts of growth indicators. I mean, the growth stock areas really falling off. So didn't that tell us early on that there are questions about growth, and then we get all these warnings? Should I be worried?
There are questions about growth without question. However, I mean, you're talking about a U.S. economy that has historically low unemployment rates. Optimism is through the roof. Profit margins until recently have been spiking. So all those things...
Man-made headwinds
exactly.
In the form of tariffs, in the form of higher oil prices, which we're doing.
A lot of it is self-inflicted. Now, President Trump might be right. The Chinese might be absolutely ripping us off intellectual property-wise and in terms of trade. There's no question about that. I have no idea. I don't sit on those meetings. But to think there's not going to be a ramification for the broader market on the back of that is foolish.
But we've had those worries, though.
Right.
And all the fundamentals that you just started naming have been positive. They've been tailwinds to the overall economy. That's why it just seems to me that it's a more deleveraging, risk-off type trade based on things that have been around there for quite some time.
I'm going to cast myself in the role of Debbie Downer tonight, though.
Oh, really?
Because we have not seen the impact of the latest round of tariffs, and we're only getting whiffs of that now with these warnings. And so every single indicator that you point to...
But when you look at Powell, what did Powell say? He said we've analyzed the data points, and we haven't seen it take hold in the data points as of yet. He's had a talk himself
into... You tell that to PPG, you tell that to Procter & Gamble, you tell that to Pepsi.
There's a reason why it's in these certain aspects. And that could be transitory.
Well, transitory is the right point here, right? Everybody in the market, or at least the narrative of the market, has been, listen, these tariffs are going to be temporary. We're going to win this trade war. It's going to be better coming out the other side. Yesterday, the IMF comes out and says, hey, wait a second, maybe not. Now we're starting to get earnings warnings. Companies are saying things might be slowing down. These tariffs might be hurting. If you think that the tariffs are going to go away relatively soon, let's call it the next quarter, then yes, this is a longer-term buying opportunity. But I'm not that clear on that. It doesn't seem to me that these are going to go away that quick. So I think you have to be more of a trader, much more nimble in this market.
One more thing. When I'm trading on the floor today, what I didn't like was that everyone said, let's just get the sell-off over with, as if it's a reset, where you have a sell-off and everyone's back in place and you're guaranteed another bull market. That, to me, speaks to the complacency that we've seen in this marketplace.
You know, I hear a lot of talk about the Fed is derailing this, but everything you mentioned, I mean, there is inflation. President Trump said we have inflation in control. I'm not certain that's the case. I mean, and everything we've seen, Pepsi, Floor Corp you just talked about, Procter & Gamble, PPG, I mean, they're seeing inflation somewhere. It's clearly costs are going higher. The Fed is doing everything right. I'll say this, though, and I don't know if people would agree. If the Fed flinches in December because of what potentially could be a market sell-off,
flinches,
we have bigger problems.
Doesn't go.
So even in light of this sell-off, you still want the Fed to
markets down. The S&P
ahead.
Is down 5% from an
for
all-time
their credibility,
high.
They need to. For the Fed's credibility, they need to stay
and
on the path.
And then what's the market response to a Fed rate hike at this point
Depends where we are, right?
Higher?
If we bounce back and we're at the highs again and the Fed raises rates, then I think you've got a problem. If we're at the lows and we've priced in this December hike, then you know what?
When did the sell-off start? It started with Powell's comments. October 2nd, he made the comments. October 3rd, we start to fall off a cliff. This is all generated by Powell, which was a risk-off event. If he backs off, everyone thought he was hawkish. So to your question, if he backs off and is dovish, it has to be the inverse of what we've seen already.
No, why?
The market has to be bought.
You couldn't look at it as, all right, the Fed really, they didn't want to leave this path, but they have to. Things are so bad. I think they'll stay on the path.
I think what he was saying is we can overshoot a little bit based on inflation that no one can explain why we haven't seen it. We see pockets of it.
If you see inflation, though, here's a question, though. If you see inflation and you say, oh, inflation in the economy is a good thing for the right reasons, economic growth. What if you see inflation in the economy and it's man-made inflation?
Right.
It's self-inflicted inflation brought on by tariffs, brought on by higher oil prices because of sanctions on Iran. Is that the same kind of inflation that you still hike rates in face
of? And on top of that question, they have to then think about the market implications. They have themselves a job that's already impossible, then is extraordinarily impossible. They can't try to navigate a market in this environment. They can't stick the market landing and try to raise rates and try to think about everything that you just said. It's impossible.
I think they got to raise rates.
I agree, and I
think just step back historically. Look at rates are. Look at this quarter point that we're talking about. I mean, really, I said a much bigger.
I agree, but the path from 3% to 3.25% on the 10-year with volatility.
Yeah. But what you have to look at for the Fed is, remember, we're talking about inflation. Their main indicator is inflation expectations. And that hasn't ticked up at all. So if I'm the Fed and I'm looking at this and I say, you know what, if I don't raise, I lose credibility because the market fell down. All the indicators I see as a Fed, no inflation expectations. Why would I get off the path of raising hikes at this point? So I think they do go. I think that is going to be a headwind for the market. But in the short term, you might get this tradable bounce here.
All right. Well, despite today's major sell-off, our next guest sees a year-end rally shaping up, says to buy the dip. For more on that, let's bring in Fundstrat's Tom Lee. This is the dip that you buy?
Yes. It's a dip where the VIX has spiked. We've had basically a waterfall collapse, and we know that we're going into this period where 74% of active managers are trailing their benchmark. So I think that the urgency or the urge for markets is really to put capital work to sort of close performance, which means a rally.
Do you think that the declines that we saw in the markets today are really as bad as they seem on paper when you take into consideration the role that ETFs are playing in these markets and that you're selling? When you sell three of the ETFs that you probably own, you're selling the same stocks over and over and over again.
Yeah. There was a big correlation increase today across markets, and part of it is that there is deleveraging when rates are high and when volatility is spiking, and we know risk parity funds were overweight bonds, so I think this is a lot of position squaring. But once this is behind us, I think people have to think about where opportunities are, especially under inflation, and equities really are the place to be.
So, Tom, I know you do a lot of quantitative work, and that's been fantastic this year. What are your quantitative models saying about this? Let's take the emotion out of it. What do the machines say?
So, quant funds almost universally like growth. And even our quant model by Sam Doctor is overweight growth. So one of the things that is crowded today is people are long duration, either in credit, right, through bonds or through growth stocks, which are long duration assets. So a shift towards higher rates is a shift towards asset intensity. You want to be long assets, not duration, which means you want to possibly think about owning growth value stocks now.
How are assets? All stocks are assets, right? So I don't know what you're saying by that.
So the adage used to be that it's harder to make a lot of E to offset PE. So meaning in a world of rising inflation, an asset-intensive business like financials can generate tons of earnings leverage because assets are growing, they're deleveraging, plus they can earn margin. If you're an asset-light company, like an R&D-based company, it's tough to actually keep up with inflation because you have labor costs and the only thing you have is units growing for you. So asset-based businesses are value stocks.
Tom, getting back to buy the dip, so I'll play devil's advocate. The S&P is down 5% from an all-time high, albeit three of those percentage points were today. What needs to change in order for it to be from buy the dip to maybe this is the beginning of something larger?
Well, the one metric we watch very carefully is the yield curve, because you can't fight against an inverted yield curve. That tells you confidence of the future has gotten so bad that markets are contractionary. The curve has been steepening, actually, in this sell-off. So I actually find that pretty bullish that we've had sort of future expectations improving.
So I'll piggyback that. You said risk parity. The last time we had this risk parity event, we were trading down between 11 and 12%. So Guy had said it's down 6%, 3% today, basically. Is it a technical bounce or is it a numerical percentage that we're coming off of for risk parity? Because risk parity has to be somewhat the same, linear, in its very essence of it. So. And we've seen the market run up. Granted, we haven't run up that much. Is it a percentage basis or a technical?
It's probably a little bit of both, because risk parity is going to want to overweight low vol and underweight high vol. And equities relative vol at 20 is actually, it's a spike, but it's actually relatively low vol. So I think equities sort of get an allocation. But you have to remember the seasonals are really good. I mean, a correction happening, let's say, in May or the summer is scary because we have bad seasonals. Now we have good seasonals at a time when there's performance chasing. So I actually think it's a good opportunity here.
Last question. I want to underscore the message that you're sending to viewers right now, and that is you buy the dip, but you want to buy the value stocks going to year end. That's where the rally is going to be. Or is this going to be a broad-based rally with the same old players playing along, the FANG stocks, the tech stocks, et cetera?
Yeah, so I have two frames. I think into year end, I think people go back to their favorites on their shelf. All these FANG names that have pulled back look really cheap because they probably wanted to buy them at these levels, or PayPal in the 70s. But next year, I think it's a story of markets are broader. It's really narrow this year, and it's more asset-based, which is inflation, pro-inflation trades, and it's probably a shift to value. I mean, that's one of, I think, the more important moments that's happening this year.
Tom, good to see you. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, great to see you guys.
Tom Lee of Fundstrat. Do you buy Tom's market playbook?
Listen, I'm always a half-empty person. So, I mean, I'd love to be optimistic. By definition, I'm not. So I do believe this is the beginning of something. Now, I'm not saying 20%, but anywhere from 12 to 15%, given the double tops we made to Steve's technical point in the S&P, I think there's more pain to come.
All right, still ahead. We're all over this market sell-off, and we got you covered on every angle after a wild day on Wall Street. First up, it was a sea of red on the street, but despite the pain, there were a number of bright spots amid the chaos. We'll tell you what they are, what it could mean for the markets. Plus, tech, the big loser today, down nearly 5% as the market leaders continue to get sold the hardest. But a top technician says there is opportunity amid the chaos. He'll tell us the beaten down tech names he's buying right now. We're live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Tech getting wrecked, leading today's massive sell-off, posting its worst day in more than 7 years. The Nasdaq having its worst day since Brexit. Bob Pisani is at the NYSE with more. Hi, Bob.
Well, the only good news, at least the day is over. The Nasdaq is having its worst month since January of 2016. But while today's drop was big, much of the tech sector, this was the culmination of a months-long sell-off. Listen, FANG stocks, for example, they hit their highs as a group back in June. Four of the five FANG names are in correction territory. Facebook, look, 31% off its highs, 52-week highs. Apple's a relative winner. It's only 7% off its 52-week high. Semiconductor stocks is another good example. They hit their highs back in March of this year. Big names like Lam and Micron and AMD, even Intel is a Dow stock, 22% off their 52-week highs. But some big software companies, they held up relatively well until a few weeks ago. Then they, too, turned south this month. So Salesforce and Adobe, Oracle, they're all more than 10% off their highs. Microsoft down only 8%. This is relatively more contained damage. So what's been going on? We've been transitioning from a low-growth, low-yield world where it paid to buy technology because it was one of the only sectors with significant growth. But now we're moving into a higher growth, higher yield world where paying any price for growth may not be as attractive as it used to be. Now value stocks may be more attractive than growth, and treasuries are starting to look more attractive versus stocks. It's important to keep this all in perspective, by the way. We think the world's falling apart, but tech is still up 10% this year. Apple, Microsoft, and Cisco are still all up 20%. Or more this year. Don't lose track of that. Back to you, Melissa.
All right. Thank you so much. Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange. And this really goes back to what Tom Lee of Fundstrat was just alluding to in terms of longer duration stocks. Tech stocks fall into that category. Growth stocks fall into that category. So, Karen, when you take a look at your portfolio, you have a lot of the big tech names that Bob had actually outlined that we lost the leadership back in June. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling now after today's washout?
And so I'm like nauseated and poor.
aside from that,
I actually dipped my toe into each of Google and Facebook, both with call spreads in Google, a butterfly in Facebook for very little money. It's kind of the weenie approach to like putting your toe back in. Takes one to know one. Yeah. So. You know, I have no faith that I will pick the bottom. I never have faith that I will do that. But I just think, wow, they're really just coming after them so hard. I think it's
if you look at the seasonality of it that Tom alluded to earlier, if you're going into year end and you have most funds trailing their benchmarks, you have to grab where the growthiest names are. And unfortunately, for a lot of people who want to get away from this, overvalued names, you're going to have to dip back into Amazon. You're going to have to dip back into Netflix. That's where you're getting the growth from in the last 3 months that'll torque your account.
You don't fall into those categories, though. So do you feel like you got to get back into Amazon or you got to get back into Netflix?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, I actually think there's better places in tech. Look at something like Micron today, right? That one held up support levels. Every other tech stock was completely getting crushed. Micron, which has been getting crushed since June or July, Bob pointed out.
Nickname.
since June, July, it's been getting crushed. Now, all of a sudden, in a horrible market, it has relative strength. That's the type of name BK likes.
It's interesting. Amazon, you talk about a stock that has not traded well. You know, we had a conversation a month or so ago. Is it green sale or clear sailing for Amazon? We said, well, maybe it's ahead of itself. There's a very good chance it trades down to 1850. This is when it was making all-time highs. Well, did exactly that. And then it rallied back above 2,000, but it failed in a meaningful way, and now it's below 1,800. Not good. And by the way, Facebook never recovered those losses that we talked about earlier in the show, which is also disappointing. So the good news is they set up, as Karen pointed out, the setup into earnings is probably as best as it's been for quite some time.
Our next guest says there's two beaten down tech names that may still be worth a buy, two that are looking like a no touch. Let's go off the charts with Todd Gordon of TradingAnalysis.com over at the Plasma. Todd, what are you looking at?
Hey, Melissa, first, before we get into the individual names, let's talk about the NASDAQ. Obviously, massive selling. And Melissa, if you remember 2 days ago, you and I were on Power Lunch. We looked at this exact same chart, and we're looking at a 7,000 level. Let's go back to that NASDAQ. I don't want to get away from the index because the index is everything here. So I want to first identify kind of the pullback zone of where we need to hold support. There's that NASDAQ. So we saw consolidation here, right? There's only two ways that markets trade. They either trade in consolidation or they trend trade. There's no other way to do it. The trend began right here. And what you want to do is pull out some of your retracement tools. In any healthy trend, you do expect a pullback. It's anywhere from one third to three quarters. And those levels right here range from 71.86 to 6680. This is the NASDAQ 100. These levels have to hold. This is your pullback zone right here. If you hold, this is a healthy correction. Unfortunately, not to get evil on you here, but if you break 6660 on the NASDAQ, that's big trouble, and that is going to equate to more selling. So while we're contained in here, fine, we can look to scoop some names. So first one up, I think you guys just mentioned it was Apple. I feel like right up until the close, people forgot to tell Apple that we're in the middle of a tech sell-off. Just really good relative strength. I think we closed right around 215 here. There's a lot of support here. If the market were to somehow recover, that seems to be a buying opportunity in Apple. Just a really, really nice, clear, low volatility trade. I'm looking to scoop some if we hold that support level that I mentioned in the NDX. That's the strongest name that we have. Next is Facebook. Karen just mentioned it. Again, a really quiet tape and a very pronounced tech sell-off. We have support. It actually held right at 150. Guy just said it as well. There's a huge tech sell-off happening, but the selling has already occurred. And we seem to be forming kind of a consolidation, decreasing volatility, just a disinterested selling party while above 150. If you take a look at the RSI, this is one of these technical indicators, relative strength index. It just indicates how much momentum there is behind a trend. All trends aren't the same. You could have trends with increasing momentum, greater rate of change, or decreasing rate of change. This indicator put in its low back here in that initial earnings move. We've seen higher lows in the RSI, which indicates decreased selling momentum. You can have lower prices, but at a decreasing rate of change. If you hold 150, Facebook could be a nice scoop. Karen, add some technicals into it, and I know you can do it. You don't be afraid of it. I like the idea. Getting weaker here is Netflix. Unfortunately, I think Netflix just looks terrible. We have a head and shoulders top here. This is just not looking good. The neckline is going to be right along these lows here. If you break this Netflix, unfortunately, I think you got to kind of change the channel on Netflix. This is not a healthy pattern and not a name I'd be looking to scoop. Finally, let's take a look at Alibaba. Even before the last 2 days of technology selling, Asia and China has been very weak. You take a look at the FXI, just couldn't get a bounce. Couldn't get a bounce at all. Alibaba, that kind of head and shoulders pattern I just mentioned, has already played out. The breakdown was right around here. We came back to retest. Resistance held, which should have been support. That name, you can't sell it now, but you certainly don't want to buy it. I think those Chinese names, Asian equities, are a big reason we're seeing so much pronounced technology sell-off.
Todd, thank you. Todd Gordon of TradingAnalysis.com. Grasso, I know you've been a fan of Alibaba in the past. We have Alibaba down, but I mean, Tencent, seems to get worse every single day.
It does, and plenty of people that have bought Alibaba, I'm still have a nice sizable profit in it, but it doesn't matter when you have paper profits and you start to look at them, you assume they were yours to lock in, but you never sold it. So to me, even though I have a profit in it, I still think that when these tariffs start to resolve themselves, Alibaba's at a reasonable valuation, it's going to be a screaming buy as well.
How worried should we be about Netflix? Because not only is it that long duration growth stock, right, but it also has a levered balance sheet. It's
very
susceptible
levered
to rising rates.
A very levered balance sheet. And, you know, valuation, there is no valuation, right? So that's the one thing we know about this is, okay, its growth is going to be in Asia. So if you're talking about a slowing Chinese economy and a levered balance sheet with very little assets, asset-light business, then this one actually does look quite vulnerable. It still has that support there. To me, it looks like the same type of support that Apple has, so I wouldn't be super aggressive about selling it. But if it does break, I would agree with Todd that this thing looks bad.
All right, we've got breaking news from the White House commenting on today's sell-off and the strength of the economy. Let's get to Eamon Jabbers at the White House. Eamon.
Yeah, Melissa, that's right. Air Force One is wheels down in Pennsylvania, where the president will be attending a rally tonight. But while the aircraft was in the air, the White House issued this fairly lengthy statement from Sarah Sanders, the White House press spokesperson, on the state of the economy. Here's what she said. She says, the fundamentals and future of the U.S. economy remain incredibly strong. Unemployment is at a 50-year low. Taxes for families and businesses have been cut. Regulations and red tape have been slashed. Paychecks are getting fatter. Consumers and small business confidence are setting records. And farmers, ranchers, and manufacturers are empowered by better trade deals. President Trump's economic policies are the reasons for these historic successes, and they have created a solid base for continued growth. So Sarah Huckabee Sanders there predicting continued economic growth despite what we saw on the stock in the stock market today. And I should point out, Melissa, that this is now the third statement that the White House has issued today as the market continued to slide. Two senior administration officials issuing comments to me during the course of the day before the market closed, and now this statement on the record from Sarah Huckabee Sanders after the market closed today.
Yeah, they are watching very closely. Eamon, thank you. Eamon Jabbers at the White House. Now, I guess the question for the markets is, if all of what Sarah Sanders has said is true, and let's say it's true,
yeah.
Does that mean that it was 6% ago or 5.25% ago on the S&P 500? Was that pricing that statement in?
Right. That's a great question because I agree with just about everything she said,
yeah.
Right? It doesn't in any way take into account prices. If you read that statement, any price is the right price to pay because all of these fundamental things are there. Well, we know that's not the case, right? So I understand this is an administration that lives by the proxy of the market as their scorecard. I understand why they have to comment on it. But to me, those are two completely different things that's happening right now.
It was the right price where interest rates were. So when you get back, the recalibration, if interest rates still continue to rise at the same path. But now President Trump has a scapegoat in Jerome Powell because he's already said he's on record for a while
but
now, saying he doesn't want to.
The economy's doing well, and we're on a great growth path, then rates should be much higher than they are today. Powell should's doing the right thing. In fact, he might be behind the curve, if you believe that.
That goes back to if the economy is doing well and you see inflation in the right way, then that's fine.
Right.
But if you see inflation because of man-made things,
and the market's telling you
that
it's
wrong. Inflation to raise rates on.
And they have to do that calculus as well. I mean, the comment should be, we have become a today shows us we're a victim of our own success. The economy is doing so well, which is why our Federal Reserve is doing the exact right thing. Breaking news.
I want to read you some comments that Trump apparently just said. Trump says the Fed has gone crazy, is too tight. I'm just simply reading the headlines. Trump says the Fed has gone crazy, is too tight.
So he's giving ownership if the market sells off.
He's pointing the
finger. Jerome Powell and his market, everything that Sarah said, is going to be escalates a tailwind. Jerome Powell is the headwind. So now there's good cop, bad cop.
He shouldn't be doing that. I mean, the Fed, first of all, the Fed should operate independently. I hope it operates independently.
And he said that yesterday. He said he respects the independence of the Fed.
Okay, so he said that yesterday.
It's too crazy
also,
remember, the Fed.
During the campaign season, he hated Janet Yellen. She shouldn't, you know, where are they? We're way behind the curve. We need to be raising rates, you know. So if it works out for him, that what the Fed's doing, then they're great. And if I just think it's
ridiculous. What did the Federal Reserve do today that they went? Why did they go crazy? Because the stock market sold off. Is that why the Fed went crazy? Well, crazy. Yes, they didn't seem to. I didn't hear anything from.
But
Federal
October's.
Reserve.
If you look on a chart, it is. It's undeniable. October 2nd, October 3rd.
But
those are the comments.
But why shouldn't the Fed be raising rates?
Of course they should.
Because Melissa just said, if you're seeing inflation because there's growth in the economy, or is it a transitory man-made event that we could sit on our hands for at least one more cycle?
I want to see if we can get some more clarity on these comments. Let's get back to Eamon Jabbers at the White House. Eamon, what do you know about these comments?
Yeah, Melissa, I just told you that Air Force One is wheels down in Pennsylvania, and the president has apparently been speaking to reporters on the ground there. And that's where you see these comments from the president coming. Some striking language here from the president. I'm looking at a summary here. We should get tape here in a few minutes, but a summary from reporters on the ground who are asking the president about stock market today. He says, I think the Fed is making a mistake. There's a lot of safety. The Fed has gone crazy. The president says in these comments on stocks, he says, I really disagree with what the Fed is doing. OK, so the president expressing some frustration. This is similar to the frustration that he expressed with me when I asked him yesterday about what he thought about the Fed raising interest rates. But this language much stronger, saying the Fed has gone crazy. The president told me yesterday that he has not spoken to Jay Powell at the Fed about his concerns about rising interest rates. I asked him if he'd met with Jay Powell at all this year, and he just did not acknowledge that. He said, I don't interfere. I don't interfere with the Fed. Today's language, though, much more striking from the president of the United States, saying that he thinks the Fed has gone crazy. Still no indication, though, that he's directing the Fed in any way or expressing this in any way to folks over at the Fed directly. Of course, they all have TVs as well.
Of course they do. Eamon, thank you. Eamon Jabbers at the White House. Does this statement back Jerome Powell and the Fed deeper into that corner where they have to raise rates no matter what the data says at this
just
point?
Just to contradict the president, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Just to show who?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he says the Fed has gone crazy.
I think you have to have, for the Fed to not go at this point in time, you'd have to have a very big deterioration in the economy. It would have to be an order of magnitude to anything that we're seeing at this point. I'm not saying the stock market is going to, I'm saying you have to see some negative growth signs here in the economy, because I agree, this does put the Fed in a bad corner. And the market still has to digest this. This is the type of language that the market is not used to hearing from a U.S. president. This is the type of language you hear from Turkey, from Argentina, from those kinds of countries.
But he has sort of warmed us up to unusual comments from the president.
The president, I'm paraphrasing, he said this is the strongest economy we've ever seen in the history of the country. So the Fed is raising rates. How is the Fed going crazy given that backdrop? Isn't that their mandate?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, I think Steve is right. I said it the day that Joe Kernan had the interview. We talked about it on the show. He has now created a scapegoat in case the market goes lower, and that's exactly what's happening.
I agree. Everything you said, the Fed is raising rates. Remember, also, from that artificially low, ridiculous level. So, the Fed should do nothing now? Even as the economy is at an all-time historic high?
But inflation does not run away, though. I mean, all of us at this table, forget any politics.
If
forget
inflation,
the Fed.
Do you think this policy is inflation's running away?
The Phillips curve doesn't exist. Jerome Powell has said
There's hardly any wage growth, is what you're saying.
Wage growth is what he's looking for. So all of this stuff could be just man-made, which
you
leaves
don't think
you the
we're
ability
see wage growth.
To skip a cycle.
You don't think we're going to see wage growth?
I think we'll see it. We haven't seen it for quite some time. We're getting sniffs of it, and that was what the January, February.
And so they should wait from this artificially low level.
I don't
and
think
they
there's
should,
any
the
risk of them
up?
being behind the curve. I don't think there's any risk right
what's,
now.
What's inflation in the BK? What's inflation in this country?
2%.
And what's the, what are you know? So you talk
that's,
about
that's
real
right where they want to have it.
Real interest
right?
rates are still yeah. ridiculous. So look, I mean, I'm not an economist. Steve Leisman can come and talk about this. The Fed is doing absolutely everything right, and they should continue the course. If the market goes down on the back of it, we've gone up for 10 years.
There's still no signs of inflation.
We've gone up for 10 years. Of course, there's signs of inflation. We've got five pre-announcements.
And if they invert the real yield curve, we'll do the same thing that Greenspan did.
Look at the last Pepsi, PPG. The list goes on and on of companies that are seeing
inflationary pressures. And for every name, there's 10 names that haven't seen it.
Let's listen to the words coming out of the president's own mouth.
No, I think the Fed is making a mistake. They're so tight. I think the Fed has gone crazy. So you could say that, well, that's a lot of safety, actually, and it is a lot of safety, and it gives you a lot of margin. But I think the Fed has gone crazy.
Okay, so it was exactly what we thought it was. The Fed has gone crazy is what the president
not
said.
Not to take it out of context.
Right. It was perfectly in context, and that's exactly what he said.
Well, if the Fed is going crazy, he should replace Jerome Powell then. I mean, if you have a crazy Fed chair. No.
Well, does that enter into the mix?
He just said it twice. So
it does. I think you have to think about that.
No, seriously? You're thinking that he is, after he said, oh, Jerome Powell is a great man, blah, blah, blah.
That's exactly what he says about everybody before he fires them. He says they're a great person. We'll see what happens. Gets on a plane. Next thing you know, here's your pink slip.
Okay, so here's the question.
I think you have to think about it.
If he replaces Jerome Powell with a low interest rate kind of person, which is what he likes, right?
What will the markets do?
Down.
The knee-jerk will be higher.
Down. They went down on rising rates.
Split decision. Karen, what do you say?
Down.
And then it will go lower. I agree.
It'll go
I'm
up,
not suggesting he's
down.
Going...
Let it,
I'm,
go
I mean,
go
if
go
you
ahead.
Call some,
interesting.
If you call the Federal Reserve crazy, you're effectively calling the chairperson crazy.
Yes.
And if you have a crazy person in a seat in that magnitude, you can't allow that to happen. He used the word twice. That wasn't a mistake because he said
he
it again.
He does exaggerate. He's got a tendency to
He's the president of the United States.
He's got a tendency to exaggerate.
Let me just make an important point. When you look at the expectations for what the Fed has been doing, people have not been surprised in any way, right?
Right.
They have
it's
not
always been well priced in.
It's always well priced in. Everybody knows it's coming. Mm-hmm. And he's crazy. And yet the market, I mean, I don't really get that, that the market seems to have digested and expected and think it's a reasonable, the market generally, I think, thinks it's a reasonable
path. Maybe you're
crazy
too. Maybe.
All right, so be it.
Jury's out. No,
that's okay.
Coming up, it was an earnings warning from PPG Industries that first sparked the selling. And now the traders will tell you the next stock to report earnings that could have major implications for the market. Plus, if all the selling has you in a panic, do not worry. Guy here has you covered. He'll tell you the three keys to surviving a sell-off. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, First in Business Worldwide. There's much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks getting slammed. It might not have seemed like it, but there are some bright spots in today's market. Dom Chu separates the good from the bad. Back in the newsroom. Hi, Dom.
I mean, 17, Melissa, 17 stocks. That's how many in the S&P 500 finished the day in positive territory during that carnage that was Wednesday trading. By now, the superlatives on the biggest drops since how many stocks have pulled back by how much, et cetera. All of those have made their way around the circuit. But as is often the case with big broad-based down days like we saw today, we'll often try to find some of the positive stories and silver linings-ish that played out. As I said above, there aren't many out there that are outright green stories, but there are a handful of these general outperformers. Now, as far down as luxury retailer Tiffany fell today on the heels of a less than upbeat report out of European luxury house LVMH and the cautious China feel of that report, not all of retail fell by as much as Tiffany did. In fact, if you check out shares of Dollar Tree, also Kohl's, Dollar General, those U.S.-based retail chains focused on budget-conscious and mid-scale consumers were actually up on the day. Then there are some of the consumer staple stocks, like Campbell's Soup, on the heels of activist investor Dan Loeb and his latest salvo against Campbell's board. Check out J.M. Smucker as well, or General Mills. Each of those three stocks in the green today. Caveat there, of course, is that many of these consumer staple stocks have been in medium to long-term downtrends heading into recent trading action. Then there are, of course, the utilities, traditionally defensive plays that have those higher dividend payments. They were outperformers as well. Check out shares of PPL, also PSE&G, and NiSource among those positive names in the sector. Though, yes, the sector did end up fractionally in the red on the day overall. But the big question tomorrow, Melissa, outside of those outperformers, who actually wants to buy the dip in some of those other stocks that got hit the hardest? But those were at least some of the positive ones. Back over to you.
All right, Dom, thank you. Dom Chu back in the newsroom. Who wants to buy these silver linings? Who wants to buy Campbell's Soup, NiSource? You know,
I mean, Campbell's Pork and Beans is interesting because you have an activist in there, right? So you have a bit of a floor in this stock. It should kind of buck the trend of the general market. So if you're looking for a place maybe to be a little bit cautious, I think Campbell Pork and Beans get you done. Is that how I say it?
Pork and beans.
Yeah. Pork and beans will get you done.
Yep. We talked about it a couple days ago when we had the activist news, and we said, you know, maybe the bottom's in, valuation is rich, but was it yesterday?
Yeah.
It's amazing how things go bad like this. I don't even remember. But on green on a lousy day, not a bad sign.
Yeah, no, I agree with that one, because you really do have an activist that could make something happen. And in the meantime, yeah, it's not a terrible place to hide out.
Yep. All right. So if you're just trying to weather this market sell-off, are there hideout trades out there? The traders have some ideas. So, Guy, what is your hideout trade?
Well, I think my hideout trade is going to be Pfizer drug. Listen, it was down 2% today. I'm not going to say it outperformed. Everything was obviously down. Steve talks about it all the time. I actually think 93% of stocks were down today, which is worse than usual. But I still think there's some upside in healthcare. I think valuations are reasonable. I think their pipeline is very good. And the fact that the stock has been on a rocket ship since President Trump tweeted about them a couple months ago about prices says all I need to know. It's very similar. You saw with Lockheed Martin when he became president. I think Pfizer goes higher from here.
Karen, Hideout stock.
Hideout stock. Target. I mean, you know, they're doing the right things fundamentally. I also like who their customer is, and I think they're not really paying so much close attention to the Fed dots. And I think that the consumer's strong. I know wage growth, but it cuts both ways. People have more to spend, and they, too, have to pay more to their consumers, but to their employees. Altogether, though, I like in the valuation. I think it's attractive.
Brian Kelly.
Well, for me, it's going to be a name you haven't heard in a while, Freeport Mac.
Oh, wow.
It goes a little bit into Tom Lee's thesis that, listen, if we're going to get inflation, you want to be in some of the asset-heavy companies. But then let's take the other side of it and say, you know what? What if the Fed does pause? What happens? You get a weaker dollar. Gold, copper, those type of things go higher. So Freeport Mac, to me, is the place you hide out.
That's big like brain
fast,
on BK.
Fast money circa 2009.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Grasso.
So basically, I had two. Pfizer was one, but GE was the other one. If you look at most of the day today, GE was in the green. So it was up positive on a down colossal failure day. So when I look at it, it's up 23% in the last month. Now it's having price targets another 20% higher from here. Believe it or not, GE can be a hideout trade.
So bad it's good.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how much worse can it get?
There you go.
Is the bottom
maybe
in for GE?
I don't know if the bottom's in, but I think it rallies in earnings. And we said the other night it can go up. If we did a whole, what's that thing when we go over, I play this game
know
over there, the more you know.
How many times we have to go through the shtick where you ask
and me, then Karen did it a few days later in the same value stock. And look at this thing. Right, it's a rocket ship.
All right, yeah. Coming up, if today's sell-off has you running scared, Guy here has your back. He'll tell you the three keys to surviving a sell-off. Plus, stocks getting slammed today, but one of the traders says it could be the perfect time to buy, and he's got a way to do it without risking a lot. He'll break it all down when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. The market in meltdown mode today with the Dow sinking 800 points, the Nasdaq having its worst day since Brexit. And it might have you running around in a total panic, but do not worry. Guy Adami has covered you with the three keys to surviving a sell-off. Guys over at the Plaza with the more you know. Guy.
Yeah, it's funny. I learned how to play that on the piano, and the next time I do it, I'm actually going to do it from the piano, but that's for another show, Mel. Surviving a sell-off. Here we go. Everybody wants a sell-off. That is until it happens. You know, when in your mind you say, I can't wait for the market to sell off 5%, 6%, and then it happens, you say, well, I didn't think it was going to sell off because of those reasons, and it becomes scary. Try to take emotion out of it. Everybody wants one until it's happening. Well, it's happening now. Embrace it. It's never for the reasons you thought it would be. Number two, stick to firm levels. And I'll give you a good example. We have talked about Facebook now for quite some time. We said there's a very good chance Facebook trades back down to 155, the levels that we saw when Mr. Zuckerberg testified on Capitol Hill. We're here now. Maybe it's a huge opportunity to get in ahead of earnings, but if that was your level a month ago, stick to your levels. Last one. There's no harm in waiting either. We're going under earnings period. And I said earlier, I think earnings are going to be fine. I think earnings estimates going forward might not be so good. So maybe we'll see a sell-off on the back of that. You don't have to jump in all in. There's no harm to wait. So again, you're getting the sell-off that you wanted. If you have levels, stick to them. And if you're a little apprehensive, you know what? You can wait a couple weeks and see how it all shakes out. Try to take emotion out of this game. Don't be emotional. See that, Mel? I tried not to be emotional.
Nicely done. Karen has a question or commentary.
I have a question for you. All right. What if you made a mistake going in and you were levered?
Made a mistake going in and you're levered. So what should be the first? In other words, you own stocks and you're underwater. I think that's your question.
No, no. It's not underwater. It's if you were levered.
Like on margin?
On margin. Right.
As an individual.
Yes.
Oh, well, then
I don't want to say I don't do that. That's not my.
No, opinion. And I'm not suggesting people should do that. I mean, that you're
playing. No, we're not suggesting that.
You probably shouldn't be playing in that deep. Leverage is a great thing when it's working for you. As you know, it's a terrible thing when it's working against you. And as volatility increases, it works against you even further. So I don't really know how to answer that question. Hopefully we don't find much of our audience in that position. I'm just trying to speak for the people that maybe aren't levered and are looking for opportunity.
So, Guy, real quick, what do you look at? What do you put the most importance on? Relative strength index. So you see if the stock is oversold or overbought. moving averages or retracements just for the home game?
Yeah, I mean, in order of importance for me, you know, relative strength's a tough one, but every once in a while it's sort of a glaring one. And it happened, and you remember the day, it happened in Amazon about a month or so ago when the relative strength in Amazon was at levels we hadn't seen in 20 or so years. That was a trigger to sell. Every once in a while you get that on the upside, and hopefully we're going to get it on the downside. So given the choice of the three, in a vacuum, relative strength.
All right, the more you know. Thanks for that, Guy. Coming up, ugly day for stocks, but one of our traders says this could be the perfect time to make a contrarian market bet. He'll tell you how to do it without the risk. Plus, here's a sneak peek into the Mad Money studio. Jim Cramer, a big warning here from Jim about the market last night, and you won't believe what he has to say after today's big sell-off. We got much more, and that, of course, top of the hour. Meantime, we are live at the Nasdaq market site in Times Square. More Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks plunging today, but our very own Professor Koh says, believe it or not, this could be the perfect time to make a contrarian market bet. Mike is joining us from San Francisco to explain. What do you mean by that, Mike?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously we've had several consecutive days of weakness, and today it really seemed a little bit capitulatory towards the end there. The relative strength index, which Guy was just talking about, maybe not the strongest indicator, but it is something I look at from time to time. The market obviously was looking extremely weak, and I thought now might be a time to dip in and buy some calls, which is actually what I did very close to the close today. And if this is something viewers are thinking about doing, it is a way that you can make a bullish bet here without risking a great deal. Specifically, you could look maybe out to the Spiders, November, the 285 calls. When I was looking at those close to the close, those were about $3. And that is a relatively inexpensive, just over 1% of the strike price, bet that you could make that the SPY could rally a little bit in the coming 30 days or so, which oftentimes will happen if you see circumstances where the market is oversold like this. It would need to rally through that 285 strike by at least the premium you spent. But in the interim, if you get a bounce, you'd also see those calls get a little bit of a boost as well.
Okay, Mike, thanks for that. Mike Koh in San Francisco for more options action Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. In the meantime, we do want to get some more about the president's comments made in just the past half hour or so. He said, quote, I think the Fed has gone crazy. We want to bring in former Dallas Fed President Richard Fisher, who joins us on the Fast Line. Dick, great to have you with us. So what should we when you hear these comments, what did you think?
Nothing. I would ignore them. I don't think, we've heard these comments before. He was a little more gentle in what he said the other day. But he made it very clear he doesn't talk to Jay Powell. He doesn't try to communicate with the Fed. They have to do their job. It's his personal feeling. We've gone through this a couple of times now, and it's had, in the end, no impact. So I don't think that's what's moved the market. His reaction to it obviously is his own reaction. But I know how tough Jay Powell is, and I also know how the FOMC, as a committee, views its mission. They're all sincere about it. It's a non-political institution, and they will not buckle to the president's wishes.
I understand that. At the same time, Richard, do you think that the Fed should take into consideration the different kinds of inflation that we may be seeing in this market? We had a very spirited debate here on this desk about whether or not the inflation was organic to the growth of the U.S. economy or self-inflicted via the tariffs and the sanctions on Iran, which have driven up oil prices. Is there a distinction in your view in terms of how the Fed should think about inflation and what kind of inflation the Fed should be hiking into?
Well, remember, the Fed cuts out what happens on the energy front, and, as you know, cuts to the core. The economy is robust. We see the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business, release a report just, you know, at dawn saying how incredibly encouraged those people that employ a little over 50% of all the workers in America. By the way, they're not listed companies. They don't trade in the markets, but they are the backbone of the U.S. economy. So the real economy seems to be doing quite well. The inflationary pressure, the Fed looks at expectations. The expectations are rather mild right now, still around the 2% level. And then we'll have to see what happens in terms of total comp, which, as we know, is rising significantly more than 2%. But the trade stuff hasn't yet kicked into the system. It probably front-loaded a little economic growth by doing inventory build. But we haven't seen the inflationary impact yet. And I just want to make one other comment here because we're all interested in what happens in markets. The Fed gave our nation and the market operators a huge gift, and that gift was given when we expanded the balance sheet by $1,750,000,000 by February, last week in February of 2009. The market bottom, the S&P at 666, the Book of Revelations number, as we like to call it back then. And it's been on a tear ever since. So I don't think the Fed, and particularly Jay Powell, given his background in credit and credit markets, capital markets, is going to shed a tear because the market has corrected. It may go back up. It may correct even further. This has been a one-way street for a very long time, and nobody who has any common sense has been living without an expectation that at some point you'd have, obviously, dramatically new volatility and some kind of price reset.
Right.
The Fed cares only about if it affects the real economy.
Sure.
Right now, the real economy is doing well. Yeah.
Richard, thanks so much for joining us and on quick notice. We appreciate it. Richard Fisher, the former Dallas Fed president. Quickly, in terms of tomorrow.
Watch the 200-day moving average in the S&P Cash 2765.
What do you watch?
I'm hoping for a huge down, then buy.
Yeah, look for that reversal. Down day, rip higher.
Mad Money starts right now.